All right. Research program, Peter.
Yeah. Thanks, Hans. Good morning, everybody. So this is our regular update on the research program. The last one we gave you was in September. Most of this update is going to be about the pipeline, but I should just give you a chance to make any comments you wish to on the active program. So in the appendix on page 4, paragraphs A1 and A2 summarise extremely briefly what's going on in the active programme. Does anybody have any questions or comments on that before we get into the pipeline?
No pre-pipeline questions. Don't get to the pipeline.
Right, so some background first of all on the pipeline. So this was something that the board introduced after the 2015 agenda consultation. I'll remind you that the pipeline projects are not active. In the agenda consultation, the board decided to concentrate on a limited number of active research projects and to set up a pipeline that it thought was realistic that you would be able to work through over this agenda cycle, which is 5 years from the end of 2016, so through to roughly the end of 2021. And when we said realistic, what we meant was, I think, that you'd be able to finish most of them in that time, maybe not finish every one, but at least start all of them and do a substantial amount of work on all of them, probably finish most of them. And also with the objective of keeping a sort of disciplined work program as you're going through, not having them all running at once, but try and stagger them as we go through. We're now a year and a quarter into the agenda cycle. We haven't yet started up any of the pipeline projects for good reasons. But I think if our original estimate was that we could do these over this cycle, if that's still valid, then I think that implies that we should be thinking of starting most of them up over the rest of this year, over next year, possibly into the beginning of 2020, if we're going to meet our original expectation of doing most of the work on most of the projects in this agenda cycle. In looking at what was feasible, clearly we considered constraints, and I think there are three significant constraints on us. But the one I'd like to put top of the list is stakeholder constraints. I think that was very significant in the board's thinking in the agenda consultation, that stakeholders have limited capacity to follow projects and we should be disciplined about how many we try to do at once. Secondly, of course, the board has constraints on its capacity and there's a limit to the number of balls you can keep up in the air at the same time, and obviously there are staffing constraints as well. This paper doesn't just cover the research programme, it also covers the post-implementation reviews, because it's a very similar kind of work really, and we thought it made sense to look at them together. Paragraph A14 lists the factors that were set out in the agenda consultation in terms of when we thought we should start projects and how to prioritise them. And what I want to do over the next couple of minutes is go through what we've summarised for each individual project in Appendix B and just sort of highlight a couple of factors for each project as we go through before I pass it over to you for discussion. So the first one on page 9 is the equity method. And I think the most significant thing for the timing of that one really is the interdependence we saw with the post-implementation review of IFRS 11. IFRS 11 extends the use of the equity method, so it's possible that the extended use will throw up some new issues. It seemed to make sense from an efficiency point of view to wait until we've got some feedback about how that's working in practice before we get into it. The other sort of timing factor is that the equity method work came up through various things that went through the interpretations committee, including one amendment that the board made and then decided to defer the effective date because it turned out that it was a bit more complex, I think, than we'd originally realised. The next item is the extractive industries, and I think the biggest factor here is that IFRS 6 is a temporary standard. It can't stay in place forever, so we need to do something at some stage. And in fact, for those of you who are here in the agenda consultation, this was the one item that you added to the list that wasn't on the original staff recommendation for the things that should be in the pipeline. And that was a very strong feeling, I thought, among the board as a whole, that we should do that. I think there's a natural starting point. I think that project is possibly quite big, and of course it will demand some specialist knowledge. I think a natural starting point there would be to go back to the national standard setters who wrote the 2010 discussion paper, ask them if there's any new information that they're aware of since 2010 that the board ought to think about as we get started on that one. To my mind as well, I think quite a significant scoping issue early on is going to be to think about what the ambition should be for the project. As I said, I think the minimum is to allow IFRS 6 to expire gracefully. Do we just do the minimum needed to do that, or should we look at any broader range of issues? The next one is pollutant pricing mechanism, which was we've started a couple of times really. It used to be known as emission trading schemes, but has got a slightly expanded name. It's a while since you've looked at that. I think there'll be a learning curve from you. I think in practical terms, you'll probably be starting from close to zero in terms of your own thinking when you start again, just because it's so long since the board has looked at it.
We have done quite a bit of work.
We have, but I think it's the problem of the cold restart. I think the other issue, I don't want to get into sort of details of staffing issues, but there's some interdependency in the staffing between this one and rate regulation. I think we want to make sure that we don't have too many of those things on the go at the same time. Or if the board did want to start this one up early.
I understand it, but I would hate to think that we really have to start from zero, given all the work that has already been done and all the discussions that we have had.
It's not starting from zero in the sense of the information that's sitting there in the files and can be retrieved and can be worked on, but I think in terms of what's live in people's heads, I think it's not something you'll pick up and be going full steam tomorrow, I think. It will take a little time for you to work into. The next one is provisions. Now, this is a project where really 95% of the work has already been done. There was a very good and comprehensive paper that came to the board, and I always forget which year it was, July 2015, so I always remember the month but forget the year. But that was an analysis of what the possible issues were, what the implications were of the conceptual framework as we saw it emerging at that time. The piece of work that's required to finish off the research project is to update that for the final wording that's gone into the conceptual framework. And then come to the board with recommendations on whether we need to do any standard setting, and if so, what the standard setting would be. Now, the standard setting could be anything from something very narrow. The most obvious there is probably looking at the definition of liabilities and the interaction with IFRIC 21 on levies. There are possible measurement issues that might be looked at, for example, own credit. And at the other end of the spectrum, there'd be a comprehensive project of the kind that we did before. So I think in terms of what's needed for the research part at this stage, it's a relatively small piece of work to do that last piece of the conceptual framework and push it on to the end. And I think in terms of timing, probably it's that one's most efficiently done sooner rather than later, probably. Variable contingent consideration is something that's come up through the interpretations committee. Various issues have come through there. This is one where personally I don't feel I've got a good sense of sort of how broad the landscape is, and I think the initial stage on this one would be to survey the landscape and figure out, is it a big issue, is it lots of small issues, is it one small issue? So I would see the initial work as being a kind of scoping exercise. And with that in mind, if we wanted to do a substantial piece of whatever results out of that agenda cycle, to me that suggests probably starting off sooner rather than later, in case it turns out to be something very large. Now, the next three projects are all ones that in the past we've used a label for. The label turned out to be a bit unhelpful, but they have a common characteristic. And the common characteristic is that it's a very focused piece of research, and if we identify something that needs doing, we would see a very focused piece of standard setting being done. So the first one is on high inflation, and that's about the scope of IAS 29. And the objective of that would be to look to see whether it's feasible and desirable to extend the scope of IAS 29 so that it doesn't just cover hyperinflationary economies, but so that it covers high inflation economies as well. It wouldn't involve looking at the mechanics of what we do in IAS 29. It would purely be looking at the scope of IAS 29. Now, when you discussed this during the agenda consultation, I think the issues that really interested you were, first of all, how would users react? And it's not so much the users who are already used to seeing this kind of information in countries that have hyperinflation and have a tradition of doing some of this. It's the people who haven't been used to doing that. And I think that's going to be quite difficult to assess, in fact, because if they haven't seen it, it's going to be hard to figure out how they'll actually react to something that they don't know yet. Secondly, we want to figure out whether there's likely to, although we don't want to get into IAS 29 and reopen the mechanics of the accounting, it's quite possible that extending the scope might put extra pressure on it. And we want to try and assess whether there's any risk of that. And I think the third risk factor is if we broaden the scope, I think it's likely that there'll be more countries that dip in and out of the regime. We'd need to think about what the implications might be of that. So the work for that one, I think, is relatively focused, but quite difficult, because it will be assessing some unknowns. In terms of timing, there was some work that was being done by the Latin American standard setters through IFAS. We're trying to get some information. That isn't complete yet. We haven't had that come back. And so that's one reason, in fact, why we suggested in our recommendation maybe holding that one back till next year rather than aiming to start that one this year. The second project in this kind of focus category is pension benefits that depend on asset returns. Now, this would be purely about trying to resolve an anomaly that we know exists, and I think everybody acknowledges that exists, which is an inconsistency between the cash flows and the discount rate in cases where the payouts to the beneficiaries depend on asset returns. You have to discount at one, project at one rate, and discount at a rate that really isn't the appropriate rate for cash flows with those characteristics. And the idea would be a simple fix that says that the cash flows you include are not more than the effective rate and the discount rate. We think it's a simple fix. The idea of the research would be to go out and talk to people and figure out whether there's any unintended consequences, whether there's anything we haven't considered. We would not be looking at other aspects of pension accounting. We would not be looking at other aspects of pension benefits that depend on asset returns. For example, we wouldn't be looking at the effects of the sort of higher of guarantees, which is a whole subject in its own. Of course, it interacts with it. But we think that this anomaly is a known anomaly that it should be possible to deal with separately without getting into any of the broader issues. And the third of these narrow focus projects is on SMEs that are subsidiaries. Now, what this one is about is that if you've got an SME that's a subsidiary of a non-SME, the subsidiary would qualify for the SME standard. It could use the SME standard. That gives it the benefit of the reduced disclosures that the board has decided are appropriate for SMEs, but it wouldn't be able to use the recognition and measurement requirements in full IFRS. And so for consolidation purposes, it would end up having to restate them to put them up to the group. And obviously that involves some costs. The objective of this one would be to look at whether it's possible to combine the SME disclosures with the full recognition and measurement. The research we would aim to do for this one is really two pieces. The first is that we couldn't literally just take the SME disclosures as they are, because obviously they wouldn't quite match with the recognition measurement requirements. There'd be things that are in one place and not in the other. So we would need to tailor them to make sure they did dovetail. In doing that, we would not be aiming to reconsider the disclosure requirements. We'd be aiming to do the minimum that's necessary to make them dovetail properly. So the first part of the research would be to assess, is that practical? Is that actually going to work? And secondly, we would want to assess whether that approach is likely to be taken up by people, because if nobody's going to do it, there's no point in trying to do it. But it's important to understand it's not about trying to create a third regime either. It's trying to create pieces of our two existing regimes and combining them in a way that will still provide useful information to users, but hopefully take out some costs from the system. Then the last two to mention are the post-implementation reviews. So we've got the PIR of IFRS 10, 11 and 12, and we've always tended to talk about those as a package, the consolidation suite. This is a PIR that we are required to do. We normally start up once we've had at least a couple of years of experience internationally of applying the standard. there's a brief analysis in the paper of what those starting dates were, and it's slightly different for the investment entity piece than it is for the rest of the package. A bit later for the investment entity piece. So there's a sort of general question: is it does enough information yet exist to make it worthwhile doing the PIR? And there's a secondary question about whether we should do it all at once or whether we should split it into components. For example, if there are some pieces where the information might exist already but not for others. So, for example, if it's too early for investment entities, we can maybe look at the other pieces. Or because of the interdependency with the equity method, maybe we might want to look at IFRS 11 first. I think a related question is, in terms of timing, is obviously a lot of the PIR in the early days is about outreach and discussion with people. And the question is it the same population of people we want to talk to for the whole package? We don't really know the answer to that yet, I think, but the answer is it's probably some overlap, but some differences as well. There'll be people who are particularly interested in, let's say, joint ventures, but may not be interested in the rest of the consolidation or vice versa. But obviously there'll be some common ground as well. And finally, IFRS 5, this is not one we're required to do. The board decided to add this one to the pipeline because quite a few issues on IFRS 5 came up through the Interpretations Committee, and the board decided that a PIR would be the most effective and efficient way to start off looking at IFRS 5. So there's no particular timing need. The information should already be out there. There's no reason from that score for us to delay. It's come from live issues that came to the Interpretations Committee at least several years ago. So the timing factors are slightly different for that one. I'll just mention one other factor, which is the commodity loans item that you discussed last month that's mentioned in the paper. Now, that's going to come back to the board. We've not included that in the analysis here. If it does come back to you with some recommendation, the recommendation might be to look at doing something narrow scope. It might be to look at doing some research. And obviously, you'll assess that when that comes along. I think from talking a bit to Petrino, I think the feeling is that if a recommendation comes, it's more likely to look at narrow scope amendment rather than some broad research project, but obviously we'll have to see what the paper looks like when we come back. So we've summarised in the recommendation the ones that we think we should aim to start off this year, with the others starting up next year, possibly into the beginning of the following year. And those are summarised in paragraph 6, and so I'll throw it over to you for comments and questions.
Okay, Daryl.
So I largely agree with the way you've set it out in paragraph 6 and 7 in terms of prioritisation. I assume that we don't need to prioritise within the list of priorities, so I'm not going to get into that space, but what I would say again is strong support for the extractive industries, and I'm certainly hearing that a lot wherever I'm out and about. So I think that is a strong project. I realise, as you mentioned, it's a very big one and it's likely to take a while, but I think it's worth getting in, and I agree with the two different approaches that you spoke about in that space. In the detailed discussion at the back of the paper, when you start talking about pension, mm-hmm. you make the note there that it's not, as far as we are aware, time critical. Now, I may be mistaking heat for criticality, but certainly in the discussions that I've been on this topic, it generates a lot of emotion. People feel very strongly, where they have the hybrid models, that the answer is wrong enough that it's leading to things like actuaries wanting to qualify their actuarial statement and all sorts of other things. So my perception anyway is this is quite a critical issue. It may be limited to some jurisdictions. But and then on the IFRS for SMEs or the SMEs that are subsidiaries ones, you talked a little bit about the starting point for that. And I'd just say one of the things we may want to consider in that particular place is a starting point of understanding what the recognition and measurement differences actually are and how significant those are. And I think we can do that in the context of the fact that we're about 12 months or 15 months away from a review of the IFRS for SMEs. And so it may be something we can think about coming at from two different directions.
Thank you. I have a strong concern with delaying equity method because
We have lots of pending issues in the equity method. Say, for example, other equity change has been completed but pulled out later. And as Peter mentioned, for the sales, then the effective date is indefinite. And we stopped the discussion about downstream transactions. And recently, we made an amendment to the long-term investment to the associates, long-term loans, knowing that there might be some double accounting. So we have a lot of pending issues. The reason why we have a lot of pending issues in the IS-28 is because the concept of IS-28 is not very clear to us. So some people say it's a one-line consolidation. Some people say it's a valuation of equity. So it's polarized. So that's why we cannot sort it out. And we have been prolonged for many years. However, now recently, we have started the discussion of primary financial statements. In that project last month, we decided to separate integral associates and non-integral associates. So in this sense, I would say integral associates is somehow similarity to the idea of one-line consolidation, whereas a non-integral associate has a familiar to the valuation method. So it's more like akin to the long-term equity investment of strategic investment. So actually, it is a good opportunity to discuss the equity method, because without reopening IS-28 at all and keep it as it is, and just discuss what's the integral or non-integral, what's the presentation should be, wouldn't work. In the end, we have to discuss what the integral is all about. So if that is the case, I think at least we have to start up research or work for equity method led by the PIR of IFRS 11. And I agree that we can single out IFRS 11 from other PIR, because IFRS 11 is highly related to the presentation of the joint ventures, and the people who has a joint venture has a strong concern with our primary financial statements. So therefore, disagreeing with the delaying for nearly 2 years, the equity method, delaying equity method for nearly 2 years.
Sue?
I basically agree with the staff's recommendations in the paper. I think you've done when I first picked up the paper, I was surprised we've sort of gone from nothing to being able to recommend doing quite a few projects at once, and I think the reason why we're able to do that is I think you've done a good job of thinking more specifically about pieces of the research that move us a step forward that are not too labour intensive. So I think it's a neat way of moving us forward and giving us the next step on a lot of the projects to get a better idea of what we might do in terms of more work or not. So I'm supportive of that. Even though I agree with TAC that we've got loads of challenges with IAS 28, personally I agree with not doing the post-implementation reviews now, and one of the reasons for that is I think that they, especially for that consolidation suite, and I think even if we only did IFRS 11, I think it's quite a chunkier piece of work for us and for our stakeholders and some of these other research projects. I think it's a bigger deal, particularly because I think IFRS 11 is going to be potentially quite complicated. So while I have empathy for the challenges with 28, I think I agree with your assessment of the best use of resources. And I just wanted to make one comment on the commodities and cryptocurrencies that we're not saying out loud today. That's coming back to the board, and it's maybe not addressed so much at you, Peter, maybe Henry I can see is in the audience, but when we bring that back, I think one of the suggestions that was made to me in the last week or so that I think is worth throwing in the mix in terms of how we might move that forward is whether it might be something that the Interpretations Committee might think of in terms of coming up with some sort of interpretation that was looking at which scope standard would you go into, the sort of signposting we talked about last time, as one of the possible ways to move that forward, so I just wanted to flag that.
So what would the interpretation committee be able to recommend here?
Or do?
Do, yeah. Consider looking at a project like we'd mentioned as one of the alternatives last time, which would be saying if you've got a holding in commodities or cryptocurrencies or whatever, and you've got particular characteristics of why you're holding them, then you might think about it in the scope of intangibles or like inventory or like a financial instrument. So it's sort of like a, rather than a big piece of standard setting work, it's more of a signposting type project.
So IFRIC, rather than the board, developing a standard
interpretation,
the interpretation committee would say, well, if you have to account for these instruments, use this part of the existing standard.
And obviously that still involves our staff. I just think the reason why it might be worth at least thinking about that is one of the ways we might approach it when the paper comes to the board is that we're going to have, I think, a number of people around the table at the Interpretations Committee who are dealing with the live issues out there in the market in terms of the questions that are coming up and the sorts of fact patterns they're seeing. Yeah. So they might have something good to contribute.
Okay. Françoise?
I'm mostly supportive of your recommendation, but not in totality. I totally rely on you on the fact that starting as many projects is the wise thing to do. I don't have a particular view on that. My point is that I'm not comfortable with not working at all on any post-implementation review. I will have a preference largely consistent with what Tuck has expressed for starting the post-implementation review of 11. But if there are good reasons for not doing that, I would at least that we start 5. Basically, if I set the extractive activities project aside, the other projects are really very much in the maintenance improvement of what we have. And I think the post-implementation reviews are also, in fact, a research phase for leading to such improvements. And I think it's important that we have a stream of that work on a regular basis without too much intervals. And as indicated earlier, I mean, the IFRS 5 standard has shown that there are difficulties in implementation. So if IFRS 11 would not be the next, I would at least want to see the IFRS 5. In contrast, I don't see any form of urgency starting something with SMEs that are subsidiaries. I think in the discussion we had on Tuesday, Martin highlighted that the real cost of disclosures has to do with collecting the information. So as long as an SME is included in the consolidation, that collection exercise has to be done, except if this SME is really immaterial to the group. So personally, I don't see the benefit of spending our time and effort on either helping immaterial SMEs or not really saving costs to anybody. So I'm not supportive of that research at all. And I think we will have a better use of our resources with at least one of the post-implementation reviews.
Post-implementation reviews, I realise the time is coming. I was comfortable with the idea of 2019 because when you have a serious 5 years or 4 years, then people have had the experience, and it also means the academic work can come through. I am concerned about the delays that we've had and the ones we've done so far. I think we have a need to resolve those. I think there's a credibility question about what we do in a post-implementation review and what action we take. And it could affect how stakeholders want to engage with the feedback process if they can't see resolution to the 2 or now 3 that are still live. In relation to high inflation, I know that there was quite a bit of enthusiasm around this project at IFAS, and I think, Peter, that's what you're alluding to, that the glass people are quite passionate about the need to do something, but equally I think you're alluding, waiting on more information from them. So that's okay. There's just is a great interest in some jurisdictions, though some difficulties from our side deciding about the scope and application, as you said. Third thing, SMEs are subsidiaries. There are the issues around, do we need to do this and who would benefit from it? There's that side to the project. The other side to the project about actually saying, here are the IFRS R&M and what would be the reduced disclosure that could go with that. The AASB has actually done that, entire thing in the reduced disclosure project. So we actually have an example where a national standard setter sat down and did exactly that piece of work, exactly. So I just mentioned that. Thank you.
Nick.
Thank you. I appreciate here, in terms of trying to allocate scarce resources, we're trying to juggle a number of factors, and it's quite complicated. But when I look at the list in paragraph A14, I'm surprised the user needs aren't explicitly mentioned. That they may be there implicitly, I don't know, but they're not explicitly there. And in that respect, I'd ask, as we start a new project in this respect, or we're picking up existing work, that we think very carefully up front about what user need we're trying to solve here. The second thing I'd say from the work that Fred and I and others do with users, engage with users at the moment, I'm not sure the lists we have today would exactly reflect their preference. And I realise, again, we are juggling resources and what's been done already and what may be pragmatic. But just to reflect on the conversation we've already had, that there is probably more interest in the two PRIs, I would say. Both, I mean, discontinued has been a long-standing issue for users. Obviously, around the consolidation standard, that's a more recent development, and I think that's probably more around compliance and disclosure rather than the principles.
Mary?
Some thoughts and comments about particularly the items listed in paragraph 6 as the recommendations. One, I feel quite strongly we should not do equity method until we've done the PIR of IFRS 11. And I think the very good work in this paper made me think for the first time about splitting out the PIR of IFRS 11 from the PIR of 10 and 12. On the one hand, with respect to 10, I know that we have dormant but not resolved issues around investment entities. But one of the, for me, very strong learnings from our first couple of PIRs is the benefit of a longer period of experience, including but not limited to the academic research. And because I think that the investment entity aspect of IFRS 10 is going to be a big issue in that PIR, that's one I would think deferring, but I wouldn't want it to hold back the IFRS 11 PIR, so I think we really should think about that to be able to do an assessment of what equity method is. That doesn't mean start it tomorrow, because I don't think it would be easy, but I think it has a different priority, and we should think about splitting it out from the package. And while I see that, you know, we made the decision to add IFRS 5 to the list as a self-imposed, I think it's more than a nice to have, but I think we have to think through the other things and maybe discount it a bit because it's our choice. On the SMEs that are subsidiaries, I hadn't thought before about Daryl's point about the review and update of, you know, coming up in the next 12 months starting that. And that may be a very good platform for trying to address the question that I think it was Francois asked about, do we have a real sense of how much this would help people and how much appetite there is for that, and maybe looking at a way of integrating it into that rather than running it in parallel as a separate project. So that would make it a bit more dependent on the timing of that, and maybe slightly less as a separate consultation for our stakeholders as well as for ourselves. An observation about extractive industries. as you said, Peter, we have IFRS 6, and it was never the board's intention that that should live forever. So one of the things we know going into extractive industries is that there is going to be standard setting that follows up on the research. So the research phase will be more about determining what the standard setting should be, big or small, you know, how much. And I think one of the things that's hard for the board, but also very hard for our stakeholders, is when we start something and then put it down for a period of time and pick it up again. And if we know it's going to lead to standard setting, I think we should be thinking in terms of timing and resources about being able to move directly from making decisions in the research phase to whatever the necessary standard setting is, rather than saying, well, we'll get through the research phase and then potentially put it down until we figure out where it slots in terms of our standard setting activity. So it's hard when we don't know what it's going to be, but I think let's, on that one, let's not focus too narrowly on just getting the research phase done, because I think whatever we decide to do, we should carry on with it. On provisions, I am concerned that partly, I'm not concerned about how much work it will take to update a good analysis that was done before, but I think to make decisions about what we should do and the feasibility of doing something surgical is going to be a lot harder than a quick update. And again, I think if we just did the quick update and had some preliminary views and then put it down again, you know, we'd be doing that stop start where we have lots of inefficiencies for everybody. So I think that one may be harder than we think. So when I go back to paragraph 6, if all we're doing is having an update of the paper, but I think that's different from completing the research phase. You know, maybe look at a very narrow task on that. Extractive, think about having an expectation of being able to carry on. I hear the points about the sensitivity of the pension benefits, and I think I've talked about what the SMEs that are subsidiaries. And you know, in terms of paragraph 7, as I said, I think we really need to think about splitting 11 out from 10 and 12, and what the right timing is for that.
Amaru,
thanks, Sus. I'd like to first start echoing Mary on the equity account and the post-implementation review. I think it's important to perform first the post-implementation, then explore equity account. The issues brought by TACAs, they are very important, of course, but they are around for far more time than even the ISB exists. So it's a long-standing issue for the accounting profession, the issue of equity accounting. What is it at the end of the day? And so the post-implementation review of 10, 11, 12 are really important for us to really have a good work in equity accounting. I also would like to echo Daryl on the extractive industry, probably because we come from countries where extractive industries are extremely important in terms of economics. And I think this is a very important project. But also in that sense, I do understand and share Mary's concern about the continuity and the start and carry on with a project. So this is a project that we do already foresee a lot of effort, so we have to really engage in it until from the research until the conclusion. It's absolutely, in my view, a priority. And this leads me to a concern that I have that's related to communication and expectation that this decision on research would create. And I heard with some concern the word delay that was used around the table. In my view, I don't see delay because we are talking about prioritizing projects that we consulted in the agenda consultation. So I would really avoid mention that we are delaying anything because we are not doing. This is the result of our agenda consultation. So we are prioritizing what we are going to do. So no delay in my view, and I think as a
an organization, we should talk about prioritizing and not delaying. On the high inflation, just a quick note. I think, of course, there might be frustration for particularly Latin American countries that have been involved or have been trying to get the board involved in revising one particular aspect that seemed to be a quick fix, but the problem is the potential outcome. So I think Peter stressed appropriately that GLAS is trying to conclude the research that they have been conducting with the support of IFAS, but until now we didn't hear from them. So I think if paragraph 7 is reflects what we do expect to start at some point 2019-2020, it will be reasonable, and I do agree with that. In this particular project, and here I would go back to Nick's on his comment on the user's needs. In this particular project of inflation that appears to be a quick fix, user needs is extremely important to understand. Because if the fix is in the way that has been proposed, this can be extremely, can affect extremely the way financial reporting is communicated. So the potential for expansion of inflation-adjusted financial reporting is very significant, at least considering the numbers that were extracted of statistics of recent recent inflation around the world. And I have, I guess it's a comment and a question. Because if I understood correctly, Mary suggested that in the revision of the IFRS for SME, they investigate the issue of SMEs as subsidiaries. I have thought about that. I thought it was, could be eventually interesting. But you don't mention specifically in this research the revision of the IFRS for SMEs. So I know it's a different assessment, but would be important in the final communication to have this included, because this would involve staff and this would involve efforts from the board.
I would just like to make one comment on extractive industries, which I support taking on the agenda. I don't know exactly what it means to ask the national standard setters to update their discussion paper. What I think is extremely important that we have at the very beginning of, or as an outcome of that exercise, that we have at least some sort of a rough cost-benefit analysis. Because I suspect that this is going to be a standard where a lot of people are going to tell us in the industry, we're perfectly happy with what we have. Don't change a winning team. They have a lot of choice in their accounting. And they'll come back to us, our investors understand us perfectly, so why are you bothering us? And so we need good reasons to bother them, and that, but not at the end of the process, but at the beginning of the process. Changwu?
Thank you. Just a quick question on the PIR of the IFRS 10 return. Is it okay there if we delay this PIR? our due process handbook says requires us to do something after 2 years.
Talks about what we usually do.
Yeah, the wording is slightly softer than that. Talks about what's usually done.
So do we need we don't need any kind of clearance from the due process committee, even though if we do not start this PIR. Some years later.
Well, I don't think we need to sort of count to the month, but I mean, if it was looked like a much, much later than that, sort of 10 years or 15 years, that would be a different story.
I think we certainly need to have a plan. But I think it's also important that we have had feedback, I think, from ASA in particular, about a concern that the timing, I'm looking at Anne as I say this because I think you might have been at the meeting, the timing of our PIRs are maybe a little bit too early in people's minds because we don't necessarily have as much information. Now, I completely understand the IFRS 11 equity method point, but
but I'm not that, I'm not, I think we can't put it off forever because we are committed to do it, but I think we do have some flexibility.
Are we going to look at this in the updating of the due process document?
Yeah.
Handbook?
Yeah. And also...
I think we need more flexibility here.
Yeah.
Okay, what I'm suggesting that to some kind of clearance from the trustees is one suggestion. The another thing is the equity accounting is conditional on this PIR. So among all these 8 projects in the pipelines, equity accounting issue is having a kind of unfair treatment, I guess, because it's a contingent on this one. Others you can start without any of this kind of contingency. The final, maybe minor thing is failure and contingent consideration. How about changing the consideration into payment? Because the scope is just only variable payment, right, for that to purchase something. But if you keep using the consideration, it might give us some kind of confusion. We are going to deal with some all kind of issues of variable payment and consideration, everything. So how about changing that into payment?
Tom?
Yes, can I ask just a question about the SMEs one? It strikes me in some ways it sounds like that might be an easy one to do, but just it's not clear where is the source of the request for this coming from and why?
So that came up in the agenda consultation. It wasn't a widespread demand. It was a relatively small number of people who suggested it. But the reason we recommended to the board including it in the pipeline and the reason the board accepted was a feeling that if it turns out to be viable, that it might be a way of removing some unnecessary costs and still providing the information that users need.
And just because I'm really ignorant about this, it strikes me there's 2 ways this could work. Are the SMEs currently doing full IFRS and they'll save by switching and doing less disclosure? Or are the SMEs doing SMEs accounting and it's costly to transform that accounting into the consolidated? Or is it either?
So they've got 2 options. They can either do the SME accounting, which means that they then need to switch to full IFRS for the group, obviously subject to materiality considerations. Or if they don't do that, then they're using full IFRS with the full IFRS disclosures. For the SME.
Do you know the relative size of the 2 groups?
No idea.
Okay.
Daryl?
I wanted to come in again just to clarify on some of the things I said on SME, but also to pick up on some of the questions that were asked, and I might be able to answer Tom's question to a certain extent. Clarification is that I definitely wasn't saying that we should leave this project to the review of the SMEs. I think there is some ability for us to move towards recognition and measurement, consistent recognition and measurement from there, and some issues like capitalization of development costs and the like, we're actually feeling quite a lot of pressure on the SME side to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first element, but I don't think it takes away from the project. To Anne's comment earlier about the fact that the ASB has developed a solution, and there are 1 or 2 other jurisdictions that have also, I think that's useful for us in actually 2 different ways. One is for us to be able to see what they've done and see whether or not we can learn from what has actually worked in those jurisdictions. But I think the second might be also for us to get a better understanding of how popular it has been in those jurisdictions and whether it is regularly used or not. And I think that would be an important part of just an exercise to understand the benefit of doing it. Tom, to your question, typically what I've seen anyway, and sorry, there's 1 other thing that's worth making the point of, is that a number of jurisdictions that have adopted IFRS and IFRS for SMEs have at the same time disposed of or dispensed with any standard setting capacity in that jurisdiction. So they no longer have the resource or the capacity to build their own solution in this space. But it is telling that those countries that have maintained a standard setting capacity have actually gone down this route, well, at least some of those countries have done it. Tom, my experience is that what companies have done is they've ended up going the full IFRS route because the ability to bridge the gap on recognition and measurement essentially is a re-audit and a re-preparation of the numbers. And I think this comes to the point that Francoise was making, is that I think there is a view that having already put together the disclosure requirements for full IFRS for their PACs and the like, it's an easier step than just to apply that into the financial statements. That said, my experience in this space, and I come from a company that essentially had one that was required to do full IFRS in the context of its listing requirements, and then about 900 companies below that that then had to comply with the full IFRS requirements for disclosure, even though essentially they were not listed companies, they didn't have that listing requirement. And that as much as it sounds like you're just applying the information you've already got, is a massive exercise because of materiality considerations, because of preparations, because of preparing those sets of financial statements and the like. So I do think this has a significant impact. I think it is one, though, that it might be worth us just understanding how it's been used by those jurisdictions that have it.
Just a quick follow-up, then. I'm really sympathetic to, I think, Daryl's suggestion to roll it, and Canada as well. Actually, I was on the group that did it when, at the time, the SMEs was being formed. Canada did its own accounting standards for private entities, and one of the things they did was look at disclosure. Certainly, the feedback they got at the time was that the disclosures were costly and that you could do it in such a way as not to harm the user group that would be using the private entity, and that there were really significant cost savings. But I think Daryl has it right that a comprehensive look makes more sense.
Could I maybe comment on that? I've got a few things I sort of stored up to clarify, but maybe if I pick up the SME points first of all. So first of all, our idea was...
Peter, perhaps it's best we...
Okay, sure.
Gary, and then you can address those issues, and perhaps also tell us if you see any reason to make bigger or smaller amendments to your proposal.
Thank you. And actually, Peter, I like the thought process throughout this whole thing. I thought it was very well done. But as I look through the details, and there's only two subjects, and it's be on provisions and on extractive industries, that you said there is a time urgency other than no time urgency, which all the other ones. So assuming you can't start with all five at once, I would start with the two that your own backup has said is more time sensitive than the others. It's a suggestion. And I fully support extractive industries. If I could only do one off this list, it would probably be that. But I would start with the ones you prioritized, more time sensitive. I think I wasn't originally going to raise on SMEs, but listening to the discussion here is, I'll tell you, I think local books of account are sort of kept on the basis that's convenient for the parent company. It might be our standards, might be local GAAP, might be tax base, might be parent company standards, and so on. So I'm not necessarily a believer this is a higher priority project. And I also think the thought process going in assumes that the ultimate parent is an IFRS reporting company, and that's not necessarily a good assumption. I can assure you I had hundreds of them in a former life that the ultimate parent was not an IFRS filer. So they're going to have records and internal reporting that's consistent for a parent who's not subject to our standards. So again, I think that's just a complicating factor in it. I think comment on inflation, the only thing I would note is inflation is kicking up a bit in the world. Now, maybe not enough to get most companies that are low, countries that are low inflation, to make it to high inflation. But if I recall the discussions on that project, it really wasn't much more than just redrawing the line, between basically expanding those countries that could be inside hyperinflation. In that sense, I think it's easy. I don't know if it's a priority. I'll defer to others. But inflation is starting to kick up in the world. Then lastly, I think on pensions, I manage these things for 25 years, and I know an awful lot about asset-dependent pension plans. This is not as easy as you think it is, or at least as you might imagine, you fix or put a cap on the asset returns, because all the hybrid plans, I really personally, it's a third model. It's not a DB, it's not a DC. I think it's a third model. And so even if you put a cap on the asset returns, I appreciate it's entity reporting, But if the pension plan delivers more income, results in that, I mean, is that goes to the asset cushion or the ceiling, whatever we call them, the Mensah 19 we did. I mean, that gain doesn't go away. What happens next year when you do you get to use it, you know, and the returns fall short? And still a further complicating factor is what if there's a floor with a parent company, the classic defined benefit form that kicks in, and what do you do? For those reasons, I think this is more complex than just simply we'll cap the return at the discount rate, because returns either exist or they don't exist, and you just, you're back into cushions and smoothing and so on. So I think it's more difficult than you might think.
Okay, so let me make a few comments about some things I've noted from your comments as we've gone through. First of all, on Gary's point about sort of prioritising within the buckets, I mean, we've deliberately only gone down to sort of two buckets, the one starting this year and the one starting beyond next year. Whether we started a particular one in June, let's say, or October, I think will be partly dependent on when people become available and things of that kind. And so we thought it didn't make any sense to sort of prioritise any more than the ones we start in the first bucket and the ones we start in the second bucket. And there'll inevitably need to be a bit of flexibility on that. On the SME one, as that's come up, so there's been work done by AASB and others, as said, but I think what we proposed to the board and what the board accepts in the agenda consultation was not looking at the disclosure requirements and re-engineering them. It was trying to take what already existed. And if it was an ideal world, we'd just take the disclosures that are already in the SME standard. That the board's discussed those, it's decided those are appropriate for users of SME financial statements. We wouldn't try and second-guess that. We would just do the minimum that's needed to make them work with the recognition and measurement requirements of full IFRS. So that's the idea of the project. And I think it's important to keep that scope in mind, because I think it would be quite a big scope creep to get into starting to think again about the disclosures and whether we want to tinker with them beyond that. In terms of timing, I think it is right that we need to sort of dovetail that with the SME review. And I think from a staffing point of view, we'll probably try and staff it with common staff as well, because it makes sense, there's sort of economies of scale in trying to think about the two together. And if it does lead into standard setting, we'd need to sort of work out detailed timetables as we go forward to make that work. In terms of what would be needed to fit with the full recognition and measurement, obviously we need to consider that in the next SME review, there's quite a big batch of standards that weren't looked at in the last review. And so, you know, who knows where we're going with that at the moment. We won't know until we're in the review with that. So it may make sense to... that if this does lead to standard setting, to hold the standard setting back anyway until the next review is well underway at least. In terms of pensions, I forgot to say for pensions, I think what the work would be for the research part, which I think would primarily be outreach and discussing with pension experts, auditors, regulators and such like, to find out whether the thing would work as we expect. Yes, there are lots of other issues in hybrid plans, but we know there's an anomaly here which is kind of self-imposed. We wouldn't be trying to come up with the best accounting for hybrid plans just to fix this one anomaly. The equity method, I think TAC made a very good point about the discussion in primary financial statements on integral versus non-integral. That's quite closely linked in a way to... One of the sets of issues that could be looked at in the equity project is about the meaning of significant influence, for example. Now, it might be that when we've gone and looked through all this integral, non-integral, we might decide that significant influence, maybe that doesn't actually have a place in the future. That, you know, that a sort of very broad scope project could look at things of that kind. It's too early to say that, but I think bringing in that thinking from primary financial statements is important. I think I forgot to say as well that we don't think the PIR of IFRS 11 needs to finish before we start equity methods. I think the important thing is that we've got enough sense from the PIR of whether there are other issues we need to be picking up as we do the equity method work. So I think we need to have kicked it off, and we needed to start discussing with people, and we can start off some of the equity methods work without having finished the PIR or even necessarily having got, you know, sort of 50% of the way through. On the PIRs, the completion of PIRs, and I agree with Anne's comments that it's important both to do the PIRs and to finish the follow-up, and of course we're still in the follow-up stage. Well, we're finishing one PIR at the moment, we're finishing the follow-up of two others still at the moment, and it is important to do that. That's slightly separate from the question of when do we start off the next PIR or PIRs. Amaro's point about the messaging I think was important. There's nothing in here that's being delayed. The board set up the pipeline, it thought it was things that it could feasibly work on over the agenda cycle. What you're now deciding is which parts of the agenda cycle makes most sense to pick up individual projects in. On extractives, I certainly agree with Hans's comments about cost benefit, and I think we should get that in. I should clarify what I said earlier, which is that I don't think we should ask the national standard setters to update the discussion paper. I think that's more than we actually need. The discussion paper was quite extensive. Obviously, we had a lot of comments and feedback. I think what we should do is ask them to let us know whether they think anything significant has changed since the DP. And if they tell us nothing has changed, we'll sort of start with the DP and what feedback we've got from the DP. If they tell us, you know, the world has changed and there's some more things to think about, then they can tell us that. And that will give us a good kind of starting point to get going, I think. So those were the main points I had. Now, in terms of what's come up in the discussion, so I've heard some people suggesting some concerns about the equity method and whether we should accelerate that a bit, and some concerns about the PIRs, either part of 10 to 12 or possibly 5, and whether we should bring any of that forward. If we brought any of that into the first bucket, we'd probably need to think about moving something else back out of the first bucket, so if we're not going to be too ambitious.
Well, shall we just see who can support the staff's recommendation
just
as it is?
One word. I appreciate that Peter's comment, and I think also I agree that we need to have a PIR of IFRS 11 before we tackle equity method. However, I do not really understand we have to delay PIR, because PIR is the issue we listen to the constituents. And the feedback from constituents are essential for our work. So delaying PIR for nearly 2 years means we are not going to listen to you for 2 years, whereas we are going to propose some new ideas of primary financial statements, including integral, non-integral. Doesn't really make sense to me. So therefore, I do understand we need some resources to start up PIR. However, we do not really have a time limit for the conclusion of the PIR. So I do not really understand to hesitate to starting up PIR of IFRS 11 this year, whereas we are seriously discussing what is a good presentation of joint ventures, what is the good presentation of integral equity in the primary financial statement. So I think I can't find out any reason why we have to delay PIR of IFRS 11. Yeah, that's just my comment.
Okay, shall we vote?
All right.
We hold for lunch and we'll get back at 1:15.